Hey, what's good, everyone? This is Rich, and I'm here with Wim, and you're listening to the Paychecks and Balances podcast, where we take a fun, formative look at work and money for the rising professional. Today, we're going to talk about interview questions to always be prepared for, but first, what's good, good sir?
Living the dream, friend, living the dream. Apparently losing my voice because I almost lost it just saying that sentence, but I'm good.
Yeah, I'm feeling kind of struggly right now. I'm not sure what it is. I've mainly been laying on the couch. Well, maybe that's the problem right there. I've been laying around so much that my voice is in a perpetual tired state. That, and I feel like I haven't really said a word all weekend since I've just been home alone chilling.
Yeah, as we talked about in the offline discussions, I think all my age is hitting me all at once this weekend for reasons unknown. Like, my vision's gone bad, my voice is going out, body just breaking down on me. So, yeah, you know, these are the things I guess you got to embrace on the right or wrong side of 30. I'll let the listeners figure out which one side we fall on.
Definitely almost hurt myself standing up, doing nothing else than just putting both palms on the couch and standing up, and suddenly my back started hurting. That's just the state of the affairs. The state of the life that we live. But yeah, man, we got a couple of 5-star reviews this week.
You got I'm reading both. I thought I was reading the second.
You are.
All right. From Steph K, I'll start there. A split to cheer for, 5 stars. I have to say the split between Paychecks and Balances and the TGOS main show is such a good look. It's known in my office that I listen to podcasts when I have in earphones. I've had at least 3 conversations about your show. Thank you. And converted an HR coworker into a listener. Welcome aboard, HR coworker. Pause in Paychecks and Balances when someone comes into my office. The bold graphic stating that what I'm listening to has put me on the high flyer list in the office. Not a bad place to be. Thank you, gentlemen. You're welcome. Keep doing what you do on 2 great podcasts.
Appreciate that, Steph K. Appreciate them 5 stars. And we also got one here from West Philly, and the headline on this one, 2 guys, 2.5 shows, 5 stars. Rich and Wim, excellent advice from the Bumpy perspective. I'm pretty sure that means black urban professional, and I'm not quite sure where the PIE came from. Insightful career and financial planning with a focus on the millennial generation Y demographic. Always worth the listen. I suggest you get familiar. So West Philly, appreciate that 5-star review. And if you've been enjoying the show and would like to leave us a 5-star review on iTunes so we can read it on air, you can visit us at paychecksandbalances.com/review for instructions if you don't know how. Otherwise, head over to iTunes, give us those 5 stars. And yeah, it'll really help us reach more people and get people to check out the show who might not otherwise, who probably really need some of the stuff that we're talking about. So anything else you want to add before we get into the mix?
Nothing more than I'm glad you were here to translate Buffy, because I was lost from the beginning, and I only have to assume that what you translated was accurate because I'm still somewhat lost right now. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, I remember a few years ago, there were some blogs in D.C. that had Buffy in the title, and I was like, what the hell is this Buffy business? And then someone was like, oh, yeah, black urban professional. So I'm like, oh, okay, I guess that's me. I didn't even know that was me, but it is. So fortunately, I have that history from a few years back.
See, I almost screamed out like Bups Ups or something like that. Then I realized how old that would make me sound, like trying to convert something that I'm trying to immediately put it in my lingo. So you know what? I'm not even going to try. You know, I appreciate that, West Philly, for that 5-star review.
Definitely, definitely. So interview questions you should always be prepared for. So I was basically sitting around and thinking about questions that I've asked people, questions that I've gotten, questions that I've seen candidates get, and thought it would be good to do a show around some of those interview questions since they typically fall into buckets. And so I can't guarantee, of course, that you're going to hear all of these questions in one interview. In fact, you wouldn't be able to unless it was like a 2-hour interview, but I've seen them in various forms over the years. So a few things about interviews in general. One, companies are always interested in leadership and communication skills. I know we see those in job descriptions and it's like, yeah, of course we want someone who has good communication skills, but reading it in a description and what happens in person is something completely different. And they're also looking for the ability not only to get things done, but to go beyond. And then, of course, how you solve problems and bring solutions. So are these things that you've seen in terms of what you've interviewed people for, and also within the experience that you've had going in for interviews, like are these things that have commonly come up for you?
Yeah, definitely. And I'll try to think of some of these throughout the show, but and we talked about this before, but I know it seems like more interviews are trying to make it where it's like, here's a situational interviews, I guess. It's like, yeah. They seem to be moving from that instead of, you know, well, what is your job title? What are you here for? What exactly do you do here? So I've seen more of those like evolving interview questions over the years as well.
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned that, and that's one that I'm going to talk about down the list that I see tripping a lot of people up nowadays. Like, they're not prepared for the hypotheticals where they actually have to think on their own, but I'll talk more about that when we get to that one. Also, what's pretty standard, there's usually a conversation around role-related knowledge, especially if it's a role that requires a few years of experience. And so basically what they're trying to figure out is, you said you've been doing the job, but can you really do the job?
Does this tie a little bit around the test questions, like supplemental questions, where they actually have to perform a task? Do y'all do that at y'all's company? We actually don't. We have a writing sample, but we don't require you to like conduct or perform a test. I did that in one round of my interviews, and that was new for me, but it was a little bit different career than I traditionally apply for. So I didn't know if that was just, I was applying for a data analytic position, and essentially I had to analyze some data.
Yeah, so I haven't had to do that personally, but I've recruited for roles where there has been some type of like in-person test, whether it's creating a presentation in a limited amount of time, looking at some data, like you said, or even some of like the technical exercises that I see engineers go through, where it's like, imagine this scenario, which again will come up in that example later on, where you're going through something that you would typically do on a day-to-day basis versus just like reading what's off your resume.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. And then, speaking of which, anything on your resume is fair game, and you really should have a story to tell about a lot of the bullet points on there. Of course, some things there's not going to be too much of a story, and it doesn't have to be a Shakespearean production, just the problem or task, how you addressed it, and what the outcome was. So reading the resume is nice, but we want to hear you articulate your actual experience. You'd be surprised by the number of people that I've had say, well, it's on my resume. When I'm like, so tell me a little bit about your background. They're like, well, it's on my resume. I'm like, well, wow. Talk about it.
That seems pretty dismissive. That has not come up for me. I don't know how I would handle that, actually.
Yo, it happens way more than you probably think it does. Like, I'm astounded. So sometimes with me, because some of the recruiter people are a bit more lax, because they're like, oh, he's just a pre-screener. He doesn't know the role. Like, he's not technical. You know, I can be a little bit more loose with this. And I'm like, all right. And sometimes I have to like coax people into telling me like, yeah, I know that it's written on your resume, but it'd be great to hear from you about what you've worked on so I can hear you actually articulate it. Cause I mean, someone could have wrote those bullet points for you. And if you can't speak on them, that's problematic.
Yeah. Great point. Actually, I didn't think about that.
Yeah. And so the actual question, so what I was just covering, those are just some of the general things that I've seen. And now I wanted to get into some of the actual questions that come up and some insights that come along with those questions. So the first one I had here, tell me about a time, which is the classic behavioral interview. Tell me about a time you had to deliver unpleasant feedback to a colleague, or tell me about a time you had to handle conflict or a disagreement at work. And really, what we want to hear, what was the situation? How did you approach the conversation? And of course, what was the outcome? And another variation of this you might see, tell me about a time you had to say no to a request, which speaks to your ability to push back. And one of the bigger things here is, if you can't handle conflict, it's likely you're going to be the person that's a pushover, and you're going to let things happen that shouldn't. And basically, there may be things that happen on your watch that, because you're not comfortable speaking to the person about it, could lead to stuff going horribly awry. I'll put it that way. And ain't nobody got time for that.
You have any advice for the people who, and I don't want to make them seem like goody two shoes or whatever it may be, but have literally not gone through this? So I think I've seen some interview questions where it's, where's a time where you had to give constructive feedback or do a actual PIP, performance enhancement plan? And there are a couple of scenarios I haven't done that. And so I kind of had to speak to how I think I would handle it. Do you have any advice for folks who haven't gone through the experience, but maybe are transitioning into a management role or a supervisor role where they will have to deal with that in the future?
Yeah. And so I've had people, especially when they're earlier in their career, where they haven't come across some of this stuff. So maybe like, you know, I haven't had to deliver unpleasant feedback. And then maybe there's an example where someone asked you about something and you said no, like the other example I gave. So you could say, you know, I haven't quite had a scenario like that, but I did have a situation like X. Would you like me to tell you about that? That's usually what I tell folks to do. And then if they say, and more times than not, they'll be like, okay, let me hear about that and see what you say. And then you can try to tie that back to the original question. And you're basically showing that you knew how to disagree or say no. that you had a course of action for talking to this person. And of course, there was an outcome, which could have been you just didn't have to do that project, which seems simple enough. But what that really means is that allowed you to have more time to focus on something else that was a higher priority. There's always a way to spin it.
Yeah, now that I'm kind of thinking through that, there was an opportunity where I didn't actually do the enhancement plan in my specific role, but I was asked to contribute towards things that I observed in the office. So I think that was the scenario I used in that particular interview. So you may be able to say, okay, I was aware of a colleague situation and my supervisor spoke with me about X, Y, and Z, and here's how I assisted in that manner. And then had that been me in that role, here's how I would have handled it. So, I mean, just giving some folks some options to choose from if they haven't had firsthand experience.
All about the options. And so for people earlier in their career, here's another one. Tell me about a time you influenced without authority. I've been asked this question in multiple interviews. And again, it's what was the issue? What were the implications of not addressing it? What was your process for influencing? Who did you have to work with and what was the outcome? And it sounds like a lot, but again, it goes back to being able to tell a story, which has these key components to it. And I say particularly for people earlier in their career, because when you first come into the organization, more times than not, people are just throwing stuff at you. Everything has to go through your manager or your manager's manager, and you don't always have direct authority. But a lot of times when you're at a lower level in the organization, you're closer to a lot of the other employees because everyone is rising against management. So you have your ear to the street in a certain way. And there may be times that you notice things that aren't going well. And it could be, and so for myself, you know, I work somewhere and the org culture was less than popping. I'll put it that way. And I noticed that there was a lot of low morale on the team. I mean, people said stuff openly in front of me. I mean, I saw people with like career sites up on their computer. Like it just wasn't a good situation at all. And I worked with the COO at the time on coming up with like some weekly or monthly sessions where there's organizational updates, because one of the things that people talked a lot about was how there wasn't enough transparency. So by helping to put together meetings that allowed for that transparency, it was addressing one of the issues that was really prevalent to the employee. So, you know, it wasn't something that I just said, we're going to implement this. I had to go and have a conversation with the COO, say, hey, here's what I noticed. And it wasn't a surprise. And here's what I think we could do that might help with that. And so it's something where basically you have an idea and there are probably several steps that you have to take to get that idea implemented. And how were you able to make that happen? And so what this is assessing, are you comfortable going to leadership or pushing an initiative when you aren't the decision maker? And it also speaks to your ability to sell an idea. Like a lot of people think of sales as being out in a car lot, but a lot of professional jobs require some level of sales skills, even if it's getting your team to go along with something that you actually think is also a crap idea, but it's what management told you to tell your group.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, what I'm thinking of, and I think it's real easy for people to overlook, because I think I have before, is like, and I'm not trying to encourage people to start a mutiny or unionize or anything like that, but if you've got some inroads with your peer group and you have a number of folks that you meet with in an office, or you're a person that people feel comfortable going to as a either informal leader or informal spokesperson, or just someone they feel comfortable talking to, that's actually something I would bring up here as well. Because there's been groups that I've started in the office where it's like, I see a problem here. And I mean, positive or negative, I'm solution oriented. So I'm not really like to just talk about problems all the time. Like, okay, so I put together a team for, okay, we're talking about this problem and we seem to be talking about it all the time. Let's get the group of people who are talking about it together and see if we can come up with a solution and present that to management instead of just complaining about management. Yeah. And I think that's easy for people to overlook. Like, oh yeah, I just got with my friends or my coworkers and which sometimes not the same thing. And we resolve this solution and I led it and I pushed it forward or whatever. That's easy for people to overlook because you might think that's just a natural part of you doing your job. And clearly it is not, because no one else was doing it. So yep. That would be something I would highlight and bring up and don't make up a story, but if that is something you could relate to.
Yeah. And this goes back to what we talked about, and I forget what episode number it was, but keeping track of all of the things that you're doing, things that have impact. Now, you might be like, damn, I got to write down every single little task that I've done throughout the day. And, you know, if it's like sent one email, you probably don't want to get that granular. But if you're having difficult conversations, you're pushing ideas, you're assembling committees or heading a project. These are all things you want to keep track of for both the conversation you'll have around your performance review, but also when you go to interview for other jobs. And that's something that could come up at any point in time. I mean, someone could find you and reach out to you about an opportunity whenever. And if you're not prepared for some of these questions, that dream opportunity that I'm putting in air quotes, you can go in and not interview as good as you should have because you haven't been kind of proactive during that in between period.
Yeah, I would say track anything that separates you from number three, meets expectations. So,
yes,
I mean,
that
anything,
is expectations.
Yeah, anything that separates you from the group of excelling, I mean, I would track that because I do think that's easy for people to overlook, especially for people who are excelling, because that's their natural state is to be in an excelled place. So to them, they think they're just doing what they're supposed to do, but they're actually exceeding expectations.
Yeah. Yeah. And that happens, especially the ambitious folks who are always looking for the next thing. It's like, you're blowing it out the park, but you're just like, that's just me doing it. But yo, there are people who can't do some of those things that you're doing. Even if people come to you and trust and confide in you about stuff that's going on in the office, or they come to ask you about advice for how to handle a situation, it may sound like, you know, you're just doing what you do, but being a trusted team member and being someone who people come to when they're in a pinch, that's something that you can also speak about in a future interview.
Agreed.
And so the other question here, tell me about a time that you improved the process or system. And this question comes up in a few different ways. And even in, you know, tell me a little bit about this project here. There's usually a process or a system or something that you were solving for. And so again, how did you identify the problem? Or, you know, what were you told to fix? Or did you notice it yourself and decide to fix it? Which speaks to your initiative and leadership ability. What was the issue or challenge? What steps did you take to solve it? Who did you have to work with to solve it? Was it the man in the basement with the stapler? Was it Patty with the bad breath? Like, who did you have to go to on this project? Was there anyone difficult that you had to work with? And if so, how did you go about approaching them? You know, and then biggest hurdles or challenges you faced along the way. And of course, what was the lasting impact? I get the feeling people are going to have to listen to this one a few times, but these are all things that we're expecting you to hit on when you're giving an answer. And again, it goes back to that point of being able to tell a story. So your thoughts on this one? I'm imagining this has come up in some form or another.
I think this one's actually pretty comprehensive. And I think to your point, this would probably be a show that I would recommend for folks going into or prepping for an interview.
Oh, yeah.
And something else that I was kind of thinking of is sometimes I think it's real easy to get interview rust as far as, okay, I've been through interviews before. I'm a senior management or I'm executive or whatever the case may be. I know what it's like to be interviewed. And I actually think that's not true, even especially if you haven't done it for a while. So I would encourage people to revisit some of these tips because I think there's a hubris that can come from, well, I've been interviewed before, so I know how to interview. Yeah, it's on my resume, guy or girl. I mean, that's what I'm talking about. And I think you can refine and polish. Like, interviewing is a skill, and it's probably one of the easiest skills to lose because you do it every like 3 to 5 years.
Yeah, unless you're the habitual get fired or job hopper person, in which case you may do it every 6 to 12 months.
Judgment free zone.
Yeah, I mean, you may not be getting interviewed where I work, but I'm just saying. And so the other question here, and this one, it's the doozy, and it's what we were talking about a little bit earlier. Let's assume the following, or what would you do if these hypothetical type of scenario questions, and many are called but few are chosen because of this question format. So people get too focused on trying to find the perfect answer when it's an open-ended question and there's not really a right answer to it. And, you know, I've had situations where I've asked someone these type of questions or an interviewer has asked these type of questions and the candidate's just on the other side, like looking at the person, looking for cues that they're going down the right path. And it can be kind of awkward to watch when someone's in a situation where they're like, I'm out of my comfort zone. And that's the whole point. You know, it's really about how you think. What are the questions that you're asking to get the right information? How do you map or talk through a problem? How cool are you under pressure? And what that cognitive ability be like? You know, because again, with the tell me about a time when and having a story, those are all things that you can rehearse answers to. But these open-ended questions, they really force you to think on your feet. So any thoughts on that one?
No, it kind of ties to something I was going to bring up later. So let me scroll. I think I can do so here. And I think sometimes, actually, I know I have, well, I'll prepare really hard for this this question that I know I'm going to nail because it's come up in every interview I've ever been in, and it doesn't. And I think this actually could be one of those opportunities where you can have a story prepared. And what I was going to say later is, if they haven't asked you that golden question, that one you were going to knock out of the park, I would answer the question you want to answer. And this might be an opportunity to do so, where you can highlight about yourself. And also what I've noticed, and I've tried to improve with over the years, is to your point, where you answer a question poorly in the beginning, you think about that question for the rest of the interview. So you're like, golly, man, I really, man, number two, you're answering your own questions 27. You're still thinking about number two. And I've actually taken some opportunities to say, you know, I really like to, and when they say, you know, is there anything else you'd like to add? I'd say, well, yes. On question number two, now that I've had some time, or whatever question it is, I've had some time to think over it, I'd actually like to expand and not change my answer, but, you know, here's what I'd like to say. And I would just say it. I wouldn't go into the, oh, I wish I had said, or I really felt like, yeah, I did poorly there. Just expand on the question and answer it now that you've had some time, because it's going to be back there rolling in the back of your mind. Now, if you've got a better response, I would say, you know, I'd like to revisit what I said earlier to that question and just answer it now that you had some more time to think over it.
Yo, have you seen A Christmas Story with the you'll shoot your eye out kid?
Yeah, of course.
Yo, you remember when he sees Santa and like Santa throws him off his lap?
Yeah.
When you were describing this, that's what I was thinking of, where like you botch a question and you're like, no, wait, where he grabs the top of the slide and he's like,
that's exactly what happens, man. I mean, you know, interviews, they can tend to be high pressure situations, even for the most confident and prepared person, especially for those questions that either catch you off guard or maybe even equally worse. You're so prepared for this question to come up and it never does.
Yeah. And I've had that happen. Yo, I've had examples just locked and loaded, ready to go. And I'm looking for an opportunity to be able to tell that story. And more times than not, there is a way you can make it fit the question if you're quick enough on your feet. But at the same time, if someone's like, you know, let's talk about the price of tea in China, and you're talking about chocolate bars in India and how you went over there, like, that's probably not going to go over as well. So try to keep it relevant.
Yes, I agree. You did say something there. What I'm not saying, and I don't like this, especially when they're trying to do it in an oppressive way, because it's almost insulting. But when they answer the question they want to answer without ever answering the question that I asked, they answer the question that they want to answer very intelligently, very articulately, and I'm like, oh man, that was a really great story. And so back to this question I asked you 15 minutes ago.
Yo.
And that's if you would probably have to be doing well at that point for me to give you an opportunity to go back and revisit the question. I'd probably just make some notes.
Fam, I don't remember what I asked this one guy, but somehow it turned into a conversation about how he makes handmade sausage. And he took his phone out and he showed me his sausage. Pause. Like, I'm like, I'm like, what does this have to do with why you're looking for new opportunities or whatever question it was I asked them? I'm like, how did we get here?
Well, I mean, if he's handmade sausage making, I can see why he's looking for new opportunities. Obviously, it's rough out there.
Yeah, I can imagine he probably found himself into some HR violations accidentally. And I think that, well, see, and that's something else that it speaks to is your awareness. Like, when you go off the rails like that, and I know sometimes in the show we go on tangents, that's one thing, and interviews it's something else. But you get a question about one thing and the interviewer has to keep reeling you back in to get you back on track. That's not a good sign as well. So you also got to think about your awareness. You know, are you answering the question? Are you off on some tangent? And if you are, you know, it's okay to be like, oh, I realized that I've started, you know, I've realized I've drifted off a bit and to reel it back in. Or if you're smooth, you can just be like, you know, and this ties to this because of X, Y, and Z to get back on track to whatever it was that you were actually trying to make a point about.
And to assist with that, if allowed, and most interviews do, I just ask, you know, is it okay if I take a few notes throughout the interview? And I usually write down some variation of the question they asked me so I can go back and make sure I answered the question. Because, you know, it's human nature to, you know, go towards your weakness. You want to speak to what you know about, but you might halfway through realize, oh, I didn't answer the question. So I'd sometimes jot down like a couple words from the question to make sure that I actually answer the question.
Yeah, I was just thinking about this time I had an interview, and it was for this current job, and it was probably the toughest interview I had of all of them, and it was one of those doozy type questions. And it was at the end, it was like, great talking to you. And I could tell that because it was a video interview too. And I could tell he was getting ready to press the disconnect button. And I was like, wait a second. And I went back to revisit a question that was asked earlier and added like two or three additional things. And he wrote them down. Whether they counted or not, I don't know. But it speaks to what you said and being able to walk out of that interview saying, you know what? I got everything out that I wanted to say. I didn't have to sit there and be like, oh man, I wish I had said X and Z. I took that last second and said it. And who knows? That could have been the difference between being a soft yes or a solid yes or a definitely we need to hire this guy.
Agree.
And the other question I had here, and this one, it doesn't come up as much, but it's still one that you should be prepared for. Tell me about a time you failed or something didn't go as well as hoped. And again, it's what was the situation? What were the challenges? And what assumptions did you make that maybe didn't pan out? And what would you do differently if you had to do this over again? And so there are a few things that it's assessing. One, are you comfortable speaking about mistakes? And did you gain any insight from them? And there's always something you didn't do well that you could talk about. Maybe not the thing that got you fired, but something that's allowed you to grow. And we want to hear about that. We want to know that you can learn from your mistakes and that you're comfortable talking about them and sharing those insights because they might ultimately solve the company you're interviewing with from making that same mistake.
I agree. I was also going to add, and I would share for people, this doesn't happen as much, but I have seen it happen, is don't be the no strengths or weaknesses person. Because I think some people think that if I say I have no weaknesses, I've done nothing but perfectionism over the year, I've never received constructive feedback, that it somehow makes them look positive or sheds them in a brighter light. And actually, all it shows me is that you're either arrogant or even worse, you lack self-reflection. So recognizing that you have a strength, a weakness, I would show both sides of the coin. So here's something that went wrong. Here's how I alleviate it. Here's some feedback, professional feedback I got from my boss in the past, and here what I've done about it. But just to say that no one has ever coached me, I've always been right, everyone else has been wrong, you might talk yourself out of the position in that opportunity. So I would say self-reflection actually shows professional and personal growth. And that's actually something that I'm looking for in an interview. So if there's is there any weaknesses or any strengths type of question, share them and then share how you've grown from them.
Yeah, man, I had an example I told for a bit. So I was at this company and I had worked with one. So basically we were trying to hire someone that required a visa, and I had worked with someone who needed this type of visa transfer before, but it was in a completely different industry. It was in tech. And so when you're in tech, there are certain visas that are much easier to get. Mm-hmm. So I was like, oh, the person needs this type of visa. I've done that before. It's pretty easy, not realizing that there were some specific requirements for what their degree had to be in for them to be able to get that visa. So we go through all of this trouble to essentially hire this person, only to find out at the end that they weren't eligible for that particular visa because their degree didn't align with the requirements. And it was super embarrassing, super, super embarrassing. And I told that story because, I learned some really painful lessons from it. I learned the importance of not making assumptions, double checking, realizing that every situation isn't the same, and how now when I have things that I think I automatically know, I'll double check just to make sure if there's anything different about that particular case, because I did learn a lot from that. And with those questions, what you're reflecting on ultimately is experience. Those mistakes, those failures, that's what experience is. And that's part of why we want to hear about it. Because, anybody who you're interviewing with, they've messed some stuff up, I'll put that nicely. They've messed some stuff up in the past. They didn't get to where they were by doing everything perfectly and only telling perfect stories where, everything was magical and there were unicorns shooting out rainbows from their horns and all of that other stuff. I don't know why I went that far. But, that's the type of story that you want to tell when you get that type of question. Something where you really got some insight from it and it helped you correct your performance. Because obviously, if you're telling a story about it and you've learned from it, you're not going to make that same mistake again. And that's really the whole point with that.
Agreed.
Yeah. So those are the questions that I had. Were there any that you wanted to add to the list?
So I do think that was pretty thorough. I had about three, one of which we've already hit. But one, the variation of one that we ask and I've seen asked in a couple different companies, and it actually caught me off guard when it was asked of me, because I think it's so assumed that you actually don't prepare for it. And that's, why did you apply for this position?
Yeah.
And it was the first question out of the gate. And I was like, because it was on the website. You know, that's not what I said, but that's what went through my mind. So I had to, on my feet, think of why I applied for this position. Another variation of that is, why do you want to work for our company? And what I think, beyond preparing, the fortunately why I was able to answer that question is I had researched on the website for the position, so I could articulate, at least, even if I didn't already have in the forefront of my mind why I specifically applied for this position, I could at least talk about what positive things intrigued me about applying for the position and tie that together in why I applied and what I saw on the website and what I could see for myself and the company as our future together, our blossoming relationship.
Yo, a lot of people mess this question up. It's like the most fundamental question, but you'd be like, so what led you to apply? Oh, I saw it on Indeed.com. What?
Right. Yeah. Don't do that. This is actually, normally I say don't lie. If that's your response, lie. Don't tell me you applied for the position because it was more money, because it's the first thing that came up in your, I would say career builder and monster, but
I don't. LinkedIn search, whatever.
I think those just send you to spam at this point, and it's check scams. I almost made, you know, I think we asked that question on the website, and maybe someone could write in. If you've ever got a legitimate career opportunity, career builder and monster, I would welcome to hear about it, because I would like to speak to it.
Oh, I'm sure there are people who get, you know, different types of roles, maybe not the type of stuff that we typically think of, but they're still in business for a reason. But yeah, it's definitely on the out for professionals on the up and up, just like MySpace has been on the out for, I guess, a different type of professional
or a
bathroom model. Yeah, whatever. That's a different topic.
Regardless, if that, don't give me that answer. Don't tell me you applied out of convenience. Make it up, but don't tell me you applied out of convenience. So ideally, now that you've listened to the show and you're listening to the show, you will be prepared for this question. And actually think it's a, go ahead.
Well, yeah. So one thing I was going to add about this and why you want to work for the company. And so someone gave me this advice a while ago, and I think it helped me get a job, particularly with a nonprofit where they're more focused on the values, is to try to find some type of emotional connection to what the company does. Now, that may sound foo-foo and cheesy, but you can tell when someone's BSing why they want to work there, when they give you those same cookie cutter answers that everyone else is giving, like, oh, I love technology. It's like, okay, like a lot of people who work in other industries love technology. Like we need something more than that. What is it about the company that resonates with you that led you to apply above and beyond the role being a good fit? Now, that could be that the company makes some type of product that is related to, so I'll give it, I'm trying to talk around it, but I'll give an example here. So I went to go work for this nonprofit, and they did social entrepreneurship. So essentially investing in companies in less than savory regions that ultimately provided different services to the people who lived in those areas. And so one of the companies they invested in, it was like a company that did some type of special eye care. I can say that much. And they essentially allowed people who normally wouldn't have access to eye care to have that. And I thought about my brother who has vision problems and imagining him being in that environment and not having access to something. And I tied that into my answer. Yes, it was deeply personal. And, you know, sometimes there are things that are probably too far. You don't want to start talking about your marriage and other stuff like that. But if there's something that company does or an impact that company's product or service has had that gets you excited, you definitely want to talk about that when answering that question. So that's
good
what
example,
I would add there.
Good example. And then I'll end with, not the show, but this portion of the questions, with the cliche. I still hear it every now and then, is, where do you see yourself in 5 years? And I've heard it more when I'm trying to promote within a company. I don't really see it as more what I would call the kind of cookie cutter or out of the box questions anymore. I think this has kind of dropped off the standard questionnaire. But pretty much anytime I'm trying to move up in an organization, they seem to be interested in, you know, do you see a future with us? So the where do you see yourself in 5 years question. And I would say, even if they don't ask this question, to try to blend it in your responses, and it's a question I think you should just ask yourself every 3 to 5 years. There was an article, I did not grab it for the show, that talked about that it was like a high CEO or something like that, you know, Fortune 500 or whatever. But he had an interesting response that even for his employees, he would encourage them to interview every 3 to 5 years just to stay sharp and to stay invigorated about being involved with this company. Just go out there and see what's going on. Are we meeting the market standard? Are we still, you know, intriguing you? Is this still a place that you want to, you know, kind of to relight that fire? And, you know, I'm real big on the vision boards and the positive aspirations because washed. So I'm moving over to that enlightenment stage where you got to find different meanings in life. So I definitely think it's really important to say, you know, where do I see myself in the next 3 to 5 years? Because if you wait until that period, you will have waited too long. I think the natural inclination is to, oh, I'm tired of this job. Now let me take the first search on LinkedIn. And then when they ask, why did you apply for this position? Because I was tired of my last job. And this is the first search that came up on LinkedIn. Don't be that person.
No.
You know, I know that can be the natural evolution. Sometimes you don't know that you want to leave a job till you're ready to leave a job. But sometimes I also think you just need to take a natural step back and say, would I be happy doing this position for the next 3 to 5 years? I had a conversation with a mentor, actually, and he pointed out, because I was looking at what I was going to do next, what I was going to go. Mm-hmm. And he pointed out that, you know, you could do what you're doing right now for the rest of your life. He was just, and he didn't mean this in a bad way, but he goes, but look at your peers. There's people older than you, younger you in this position. There's people who are going to retire in this position. There's people that have already retired from this position. So do you really, I guess he was essentially asking me to ask myself, do you really want to leave? And then maybe that, if you do, maybe that's where your answer will be. Because I was struggling with what I wanted to do next in my career. And then ultimately, as anyone that's followed this show or has followed me knows, I left that opportunity because I wanted to do other things. That helped me gain some concrete concepts around what I wanted to do next.
Right.
Because in some ways, maybe it's, you know, typical millennial. I'm right there on the cusp, 82. I just wanted change. There was really like we talked about this where the job doesn't change, but I've changed while working the job.
Yeah.
And so now my expectations for what I want from a job has changed.
Yeah. And you said something there, and it's a really good point for people is you don't want to be just figuring out, you know, how to prepare for an interview or just figuring out what you want to do in the next 5 years at the point that you've waited where you hate your job or you're being forced out. It's just a much more difficult place to negotiate from. And that's why stuff like this, you know, knowing these interview questions, because you never know when that opportunity is going to come up. You never know when you're going to be out of a job. You never know when something drastic in your situation is going to change. And so it's just really important to be as prepared as you can. Even if you're happy where you are today, you still got to be thinking about what's next, because what's next could come up at any point in time. Your boss could come up to you tomorrow like, yo, you've been killing it. Let's talk about this next position, and then you're unprepared, or you get contacted on LinkedIn about something and you entertain a call, and then you realize you're really interested and they're telling you that they're close to making a decision and want to see if you can come in 2 days. And now you're scrambling to get ready for an interview, whereas you could have, you know, probably did some things up front just to keep yourself sharp and avoid some of that, interview rust that you were talking about earlier.
Yeah, and you said one other thing there, and I don't want to go on too much of a tangent, so maybe this will be another topic. But I've definitely coached people over the years about making career moves or decisions based on a specific person. Like, yes, I like this job, but if my immediate boss leaves, I will hate Monday. Yeah. Like, I will start hating this job on Monday. The only thing I like about this job is person X or person X, Y, and Z or persons A, B, and C. And I really coach people about being careful about that, because those people are moving along and looking for opportunities. And so you don't want to, oh, yeah, your boss sends out the 2-week notice email. And you're like, wow, the only one reason I was staying here is from a boss. Like, that's fine, but don't let their career choices define yours. And another, on the opposite side of that, I've had people who are like, well, I don't want to work for person XYZ, team ABC.
I've felt that way before.
Right. And I'm like, well, you know, really gauge your career decision around that. Like, do you put off this opportunity that might not come up for the next 3 to 5 years because you don't want to work with these people or persons for the next 3 to 5 months? I'm like, I mean, really be careful about that.
Yeah. And there's this saying, though, that people don't leave jobs, they leave managers. Like that. Like, that's the number one reason people leave companies, which is what it is. And especially out here, I see this a lot where a manager leaves and then they go somewhere else. And then suddenly people from that person's team start following them to wherever they went. And sometimes they follow someone and, you know, they think they're going to work for that person directly. And that person gets moved somewhere else in the org and they don't have much interaction with that person at all. And then they're wishing they could go back to where they were. And I had someone like that where they had left the company. They really hated the boss. And of course, you know, there's always two sides to a story. And there are some things that they could have done differently. But they left, went somewhere else, followed after someone. And within like 6 months, they were asking if they could come back because the experience wasn't all that it was cracked up to be. So that's something else to think about as well when you try to attach your career to someone else's and follow their every move. So I think that's all I got. Is that all you got, good sir?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. I don't know why I got so excited about that. But hey, we want to thank you for listening to this episode of Paychecks and Balances. And again, we encourage you to leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. If you don't know how to do that, you can go to paychecksandbalances.com/review. And also join our email list. So if you want access to exclusive updates, additional helpful content, you want to get the first update about things that we're putting out there, you can get all of that by joining us by visiting paychecksandbalances.com/email. Put in your first name, put in your email address. We no spam you up, and updates shall arrive. So I think that's all I got for this week, fam. I'm feeling pretty good about it.
Same. Enjoy those paychecks and enjoy those balances.
Yes. So until next time, be safe. We out. Peace.